out to be with us once again this evening. I sincerely hope the things we say, the things that I teach this evening will be in accordance with God's will. If they're not, please bring it to my attention. You'll be my friend if you do so. Because ultimately, we want to gain from God, from studying God's Word. We want to study it righteously. And we want to get to heaven. And the only way we can do that is to study the truth. So I do hope you'll bring anything that's in error to my attention. April 20th, 1999. That was a day in our nation that our nation was struck with a tragedy. Two young men entered into the Columbine High School in Columbine, Colorado, carrying a bag full of guns, ammunition, and explosives, and they proceeded to go through that school and to kill all kinds of students and teachers, indiscriminately shooting people. People magazine, right after that, came out with an article, and the title of that article is right here. It was titled, "The Colorado High School Shootings. My God, my God." Now, if you're like me, when you read that, you automatically finish that sentence, right? My God, my God, why have you forsaken me? The words of Jesus on the cross. If you read the article, then you know what it's about, and it was kind of about that. It was asking the question, in the midst of this tragedy, in the midst of all this chaos and all this bloodshed, where is God? Did God forsake those students? Did God forsake that school? And that was kind of the point of that article, without explicitly saying it. You know, that's a question we often ask. That's a question that I think we do. I went to a funeral one time, and it was a funeral for a young girl who was much, much, much too young for us to be attending her funeral. She died under, suffice it to say, suspicious circumstances. I believe, honestly, that it would be a parent's worst nightmare. I can't think of any situation worse for a parent to go through than what her parents were dealing with that day. And I'll never forget sitting there at this funeral, and the preacher got up and he said this, and I'm paraphrasing what he said. I didn't write it down, but this is almost exactly what he said that day because it struck me so. I think it's natural a natural question to ask, where is God? I think it's okay to ask, where is God when something like this happens? Or perhaps, why does God allow things like this to happen? We're hurting, we're sad, and we just ask God, why? It's the same sentiment that the psalmist in Psalm chapter 42 and verse 3 relays. He says, "My tears have been my food day and night. While they say to me all day long, where is your God?" You know, it's a simple question that I think seems to have a simple answer. In fact, I went around in preparing for this sermon. I went around and I would ask people indiscriminately, tell me the first thing that pops into your mind when I ask this question, where is God? 99% of the time, I asked it in class this morning and got the same answer. 99% of the time, people would say without reservation, God is everywhere. Where is God? God is everywhere. Right? In Psalm chapter 139, verses 7 through 12, says, "Where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me, and your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is as bright today. Darkness and light are alike to you." Where is God? God is everywhere. It's a simple answer. I want to ask you, though, and I think it's worth consideration, does a question that important deserve an answer that's a little bit more complex? Now think about that with me for just a moment. Does a question that important deserve an answer more complex? Perhaps, I want to suggest to you, perhaps our question really needs to be a little more complex. In Job chapter 35, in verses 9 through 12, Elihu comes to Job, one of his friends, and Elihu says this, "Because of the multitude of oppressions, they cry out." Why do people cry out? Elihu says, "Because of the multitude of oppressions, They cry for help because of the arm of the mighty. But no one says, where is God my maker who gives songs in the night? You know what Elihu is calling to attention right here is a very fundamental flaw and a fundamental fact of that question. Where is God? And that is that we don't ask where is God when the blessings are being showered down on us, right? We don't ask where is God when everything's going great. We ask where is God when things aren't going our way. When God has given us songs in the night, nobody says, where is God? So perhaps we need to ask that question a different way. For example, where is God when I'm all alone? Have you ever felt all alone? In 1 Kings chapter 18, we read of a prophet who did just that. Elijah. We know the story. Elijah is going to have a showdown on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal. And it says that Ahab called him. He called all the sons of Israel and brought the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to the people and he said, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if Baal, then follow him. The people didn't answer a word. Then Elijah said to the people, I alone am left. You know, this is right before the showdown. Have you ever thought about how alone Elijah was then? Elijah says it right there. I alone am left, a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. Of course, they each build an altar, and God only answers Elijah. And then after that showdown, Jezebel threatens him, threatens his life. Elijah takes off running. He runs into the wilderness. It says he came to a cave, and he lodged there, and behold, the word of the Lord came to him, and he said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very zealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the sons of Israel have forsaken your covenant. They've torn down your altars. They've killed your prophets with the sword. And I alone am left. They seek to take my life, to take it away. I'm the only one. What's God's answer to Elijah when Elijah says, God, where are you when I'm all alone? He said, go forth and stand on the mountain before the Lord. Behold, the Lord was passing by. And a great and strong wind was rending the mountains and breaking into pieces the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after an earthquake, a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle, he went out, and he stood in the entrance of the cave. Where are you, God, when I'm all alone? God answers Elijah right here. He says, I'm always with you, Elijah. Even though there's 450 prophets of Baal, I'm with you. I'm the God of the still, the small voice. I'm there with you. In Psalms chapter 139, where can I go from your spirit, or where can I flee from your presence, Lord? Where's God when we're all alone? God's right there with us. Where is God when I feel hopeless? Have you ever felt hopeless? We read in the Bible of a man who felt hopeless, I believe. In Jonah chapter 1, in verses 1 through 2, it says, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Here God comes to Jonah one day and says, Jonah, I want you to go preach to your enemies. And Jonah goes the opposite direction. Jonah gets on a boat going to Tarshish. A storm comes up. They cast lots on that boat. The lot falls to Jonah. And the people on the boat say, what shall we do to you that the sea may become calm for us? For the sea was becoming increasingly stormy. And Jonah says, pick me up and throw me into the sea and the sea will become calm. They do that. Verse 17 says, and the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the stomach of that fish for 3 days and 3 nights. You ever have a day that just didn't go in your way? That's the day Jonah was having. Everything wrong happens to Jonah. Here Jonah is in the middle of the sea, in the stomach of a fish. Can you think of anybody that is in a more hopeless situation than Jonah? In Jonah chapter 2 and verses 1 through 5 says, I called out of my distress to the Lord, and he answered me. I cried for help from the depth of Sheol. You heard my voice. For you cast me into the deep, in the heart of the seas, and the current engulfed me. All your breakers, your billows passed over me. So I said, I have been expelled from your sight. Nevertheless, I will look again toward your holy temple. Water encompassed me to the point of death. The great deep engulfed me. Weeds were wrapped around my head. Listen to how helpless Jonah was. Is there a more helpless person or hopeless person that we can read about in the Bible? What's God's answer? In Jonah chapter 2 and in verse 7, Jonah says, while I was fainting away, I remembered the Lord, and the prayer came to you into your holy temple. Where was Jonah when this was happening? Jonah was in the middle of the sea in the stomach of a fish. Verse 10 says, then the Lord God commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah out onto dry land. God, where are you when I feel hopeless? God's everywhere. God's all around. God's right there. In the middle of the sea, in the stomach of a fish, Jonah cried out and God heard him. Psalm chapter 139 says, if I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there too. Where's God when I'm afraid? There's a story that answers that also. In Daniel chapter 6 and verses 10 through 11. Daniel chapter 6, we're going to pick up with this story that all of our kids know. How Daniel is thrown into the lion's den, and God does what? Shuts the mouths of those lions. There were some men here that got together and they said, we don't like Daniel, we're going to do something to him. We're going to kill him. We're going to make sure he dies. And they draft a document. The document's signed by the king that says nobody else can be worshipped. Nobody can make petition to anybody but the king. Yet Daniel, it says, Daniel entered his house. In his roof chamber, he had windows open towards Jerusalem. He continued kneeling on his knees three times a day, praying, giving thanks before God as he had been doing previously. These men came by agreement, and they found Daniel making petition and supplication before the God. And they take that news to the king, and they say, he's got to be thrown in the lion's den. The king begrudgingly says, okay, that's what's got to be done. And in chapter 6 and verse 16, it says, then the king gave orders, and Daniel was brought in, and he was cast in the lion's den. The king spoke, and he said to Daniel, your God, whom you constantly serve, will himself deliver you. You know, it's never been pointed out to me, and I never really got it until studying this, but if you look at that, if you look at the book of Daniel, never is Daniel really as a loss to words as to what to say. God, he's an eloquent speaker. God gives him a gift, and he's able to speak. He's got almost always able to say the right thing. But right here in this instance, when the king is throwing Daniel in the lion's den, Daniel is completely silent. Why? I want to suggest to you, I firmly believe Daniel was afraid. He's about to be thrown in a den filled with the most fearsome beast in the ancient world. Lions were employed in the Roman Colosseum to tear people to pieces. There were people who, they were called bestiaries, and they would train these lions to devour human flesh and to attack humans for sport and for entertainment. Daniel's going to be thrown in a den full of these guys. I think Daniel's afraid. Daniel chapter 6, verses 19 through 20 says, then the king arose at dawn, at the break of day, and he went in haste to the lion's den. When he came near to the den to Daniel, he cried out with a troubled voice. And the king spoke to Daniel and said, Daniel, servant of the living God. Listen to that. Servant of the living God, has your God, whom you constantly serve, been able to deliver you from the mouths of lions? Where are you, God? Where is God when I'm afraid? God's alive. God's there. We serve a God who is a living God, a God who has conquered death. Psalm chapter 139, you're there. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me in your right hand. Will lay hold of me. Where's God when I feel overwhelmed, though? When I just feel overwhelmed. We got a story about that. In 2 Kings chapter 6, verses 11 through 12, the king of the Arameans here is pretty mad. And he's mad because Elisha the prophet, is telling the Hebrew army all of his strategy. He's telling him where to go and what to do and how to circumvent this guy's army. And he brings his people together and says, he tells to all his servants, he says, "Will you tell me which one of you is for the king of Israel?" And one of his servants says, "No, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet who is in Israel, he tells the king of Israel the words that you speak in your bedchamber. He knows exactly what you're doing." So the king says, "We got to go kill this guy." So he gets his army together, and in verse 15, Elisha's servant goes out, says, "When the attendant of the man of God had risen and gone out, behold, an army with horses and chariots was circling the city. And his servant said to him, 'Alas, my master, what shall we do?' And what does Elijah say? Or what does Elisha say? We better run. We better get out of here." In verses 16 through 18, it says, "So he answered, 'Do not fear, for those who are with us are more than those who are with them.' Then Elisha prayed and he said, 'O Lord, I pray that you open his eyes that he may see.' And the Lord opened the servant's eyes and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire all around Elisha. When they came down to him, Elisha prayed and the Lord and said, 'Strike these people with blindness, I pray.' So he struck them with blindness according to the words of Elisha." Don't lose the fact. Elisha says, he said, "Those that are with us are more than those that are with them." God, where are you when I feel overwhelmed? God's there. Oftentimes God is there in the dark with us, holding our hand. We simply don't know it. Psalm chapter 139 says, "Surely the darkness will overwhelm me, and the light around me will be night. Even the darkness is not dark to you, and the night is bright as day." Maybe that simple answer is enough. After all, where can I go from your Spirit, O Lord? Where can I flee from your presence? Lord, if I ascend to the heaven, then you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there as well. If I take the wings of the dawn, if I dwell in the remotest parts of the sea, even there your hand will lead me. Your right hand will lay hold of me. If I say, surely the darkness will overwhelm me and the light around me will be night, even the darkness, Lord, is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day. Darkness and light are alike to you." You see, God is everywhere. It is a simple answer. God is everywhere. He's always there. The picture on the top is Gregory's Bald. It's a mountain in the Smokies. My favorite part in that mountain range. I've been up there and I've seen the sunsets. I've felt the wind blowing across that meadow, howling across that mountaintop. And I got to tell you, I know I've been there and I've seen, I know that God is there. The picture on the bottom is our sanctuary here at O'Neill Church of Christ. I got to tell you, I've been here. I've heard songs led. I've seen people obey the gospel. I've seen people be baptized. I've seen people make confession. I've heard powerful sermons preached. And I got to tell you that I've seen God here. God is everywhere. God is there. But we got to answer one more question before we finish our lesson. And that is, where is God when I suffer? When I'm sick, when I'm infirmed, or when I'm in pain, when my heart is aching, where is God then? Mark chapter 22 says, "Then they brought him," talking to Jesus, "to the place Golgotha," which is translated the place of the skull. They tried to give him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. They crucified him, and they divided his garments among themselves, casting lots for them to decide what each man should take. And it was the third hour when they crucified him, and the inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." They crucified two robbers with him, one on his right and one on his left. John chapter 3 and verse 16 says, "For God so loved the world that He gave," who? "His only begotten Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have eternal life." You see, Jesus suffered, but not only did Jesus suffer, God suffered as well in giving His Son. Can you imagine watching your son go through what we just read? Your only son. Can you imagine a worse pain that a parent could see, that a parent could endure? Columbine High School, as the two men approached the school that day with their guns in hand underneath their trench coats, they came in contact with this young lady. Her name's Rachel Scott. Rachel was sitting on the lawn talking to another boy. And they walked up to them, and without really saying anything, they simply pulled their guns and they began shooting. They hit Rachel in the chest, in the arm, and in the leg. And as she began to crawl away on her stomach, one of the boys walked up to her and pulled his gun out over her and stood over her, and he said, "Do you believe in God?" And the story is told that Rachel looked back over her shoulder and said, "Yes." At that point, the young man pulled the trigger, put a bullet through her temple, and killed her instantly. Where's God? In that tragedy, in all those people that died in Columbine that day, where was God? God was right there from the very beginning in that young girl's confession when she said, "I do believe in God." God was there. You see, where is God when I suffer? God's right there with you. God is right there suffering with you. Isaiah chapter 63 and verse 9, it says, "In their affliction, He was afflicted, and the angel of His presence saved him." In His affliction, He was afflicted. God, where are You when I'm afraid, when I'm alone, when I'm hopeless, and when I'm suffering? And God answers resoundingly, "I'm where I've always been. I'm right there. I'm holding your hand when you're alone. I'm listening to your prayers when you're hopeless. I'm standing over you when you're afraid. I'm backing you up when you're overwhelmed. And I'm suffering with you when you're suffering." If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we want to invite you to come. Be buried with Him in baptism, or to make your life right if that's your need. If we can help you in any way, won't you come while together we stand?